Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgane, your host for the show. Last year, Clatsop County voters rejected a measure that would have banned the display of elephants and other exotic animals in circuses and other county events. Last night, the Clatsop Board of Commissioners conducted a first reading of an ordinance that would allow circuses, but would prohibit the use of bull hooks, electric prods, and whips on the animals. The Board of Commissioners also voted to cancel a contract with the Oregon Youth Authority for juvenile detention. Now juvenile offenders will be taken to Cowlitz County, Washington. Also on the show, for years, the League of Women Voters conducted candidate forums and promoted education about local ballot issues. Now their numbers are dwindling. Leah Moriarty reports in about 11 minutes. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgane. In top stories this morning, a worker has been found dead at a Salem Foods plant, and Salem police are conducting a homicide investigation. Lieutenant Dave Okada tells the Salem Statesman Journal that workers at the Norpak Foods plant found the man about 5:40 yesterday morning. The man was identified as 46-year-old Eric P. Davis. Amy Wood, a spokeswoman for the company, said Davis had worked for Norpak 5 years as a warehouse supervisor. Officers responded to a report of a gunshot wound. Okada said police would wait for an autopsy to determine the cause of death. Teachers and the school board in Medford have declared an impasse in contract negotiations, a step toward a strike. The Medford Mail Tribune reports the two sides now have 7 days to present their final proposals, followed by a 30-day cooling-off period. After that, teachers could strike if no agreement is reached. Negotiations broke off Tuesday. The two sides are divided over pay, retirement funding, and the number of workdays. Boeing machinists in the Northwest have rejected a contentious contract proposal that would have exchanged concessions for decades of secure jobs. The International Association of Machinists, District 751, announced last night the proposal was rejected by 67% of the voters. Some union members had called for a no vote, protesting the Boeing company's push to end a traditional pension plan and increase their health care costs. Workers would have received a $10,000 signing bonus if they had approved the deal. Boeing had proposed the 8-year contract extension, saying it needs the deal to assemble the new 777X in Washington state. With the threat of those jobs going to another state, lawmakers rushed to approve $8.7 billion in tax breaks last week. An initiative that seeks to establish a $15 minimum wage for many workers in Washington's airport city of SeaTac is leading by 19 votes. On election night, the initiative was leading by a 261-vote margin, a decent gap in a race that's likely to draw maybe 6,000 total votes. Supporters declared victory but have since lost much of their advantage. After Wednesday's ballot drop, the measure was passing with 2,749 yes votes compared to 2,730 no votes. Another ballot count is expected to be released today. Washington has the nation's highest state minimum wage at $9.19 per hour. The federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour. The website problems persist for Oregon's health insurance marketplace, Cover Oregon. Individuals can compare insurance plans, but the site still can't determine if someone is eligible for financial help. This has been a source of frustration for potential customers and for local organizations working on behalf of Cover Oregon to walk people through the process. As Jess Burns reports, these community partners are counting down the days until the website is fully functional.
On a sunny fall afternoon in late October, about 12 people gather in a meeting room at Springfield City Hall. They're here to learn about and sign up for health insurance through Cover Oregon. Most are in their 50s and 60s, and the general mood seems to be a mix of anxiety and confusion with a smattering of indignation.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get started. It's clear you guys have a lot of questions. So what this is going to be is it'll be about...
Kate Wheeler of Whitebird Clinic is working through a Cover Oregon outreach grant. She and two co-workers are holding these sessions on a nearly daily basis in Eugene and Springfield. Not 3 minutes into her presentation, though, Wheeler has to make a big caveat. the online system isn't fully functional.
I don't have a definite date for you. I know a bunch of people are going to want to know that. We don't have a definite date yet.
So instead, community partners like Wheeler are doing this.
Okay, can you give me your legal name?
Sylvia.
S-Y-L-V-I-A.
A tedious paper application.
So every question on here I'm going to ask you, even if you think it's really silly and shouldn't apply, okay. Like if you're pregnant or anything like that, we are going to go through all of them, because that's how the application works.
Okay? That would be a real act of God.
63-year-old Springfield resident Sylvia Malding is here because she received a letter in the mail from her current insurer. It said her premiums would more than double at the beginning of the year.
I was just planning to stay with him for the odd year until I got...
Yeah,
but when they
year.
Raised my policy, $340 a month, I can't do that.
You can do better than that if you go through Cover Oregon.
The State Health Insurance Exchange is counting on this promise of better rates and coverage to convince people of all ages and financial situations to sign up. A fully functional website should lubricate the whole process, according to Wheeler.
There's definitely people that we've talked to that want to apply, but they want to do it on their own because they don't want to share that information with another person, but they don't feel that they can apply yet. So I definitely know there's some people who are waiting until it's easy for them to do on their own.
It will also mean a shift in the work of community partners.
I think when it's working and that application process is a lot easier and more transparent, we can hopefully spend more time helping people apply and less time clearing out all the different rumors and worrisome things that people have heard.
A functioning website should also go a long way to attract the all-important younger demographic. Jesse Ellis O'Brien is a healthcare advocate with OSPERC, an Oregon consumer advocacy group that does a lot of work on college campuses.
Students are used to shopping and doing a whole lot of their day-to-day activities online, which older folks are not necessarily. And I think students are probably a little bit less likely to sign up for coverage using the paper applications, which is what folks are doing now.
Back at the information session in Springfield, the only young person in the room, 18-year-old Kendra Smith, gets up and walks out before the session even starts.
I was going to try and sign up for medical insurance, see if they could help me, but that didn't quite happen. The lady couldn't answer a simple question that I had, so.
Smith is currently uninsured, and she says she'll try to look for help elsewhere. But when asked if she knows where...
I don't. I'm going to look online, but that's about it.
Exactly when Cover Oregon's website will be fully functional is still unknown. Last Friday, the governor said it may not be fixed before the new year. After missing their first two deadlines, officials are hesitant to publicize another. I'm Jess Burns, reporting.
The League of Women Voters has been a fixture of elections for nearly 100 years, organizing candidate forums and promoting voter participation across the country. Now, Leah Moriarty reports, especially in rural areas, changing times means those familiar civic programs are in danger of disappearing.
For more than 40 years, the Klamath County chapter of the League of Women Voters has been doing what chapters all across the U.S. have always done, studying local issues, proposing nonpartisan solutions, and generally pushing for better, more responsive government. Now, with their members aging and their numbers dwindling, chapter president Leslie Lowe says the remaining handful of active members simply can't handle all the work needed to be an effective chapter.
It's extremely limiting.
The group is planning to sponsor a candidates forum before the primary next May. But Lowe says,
if we have not gotten 10 new members that can be active, we will close this chapter, because we have been struggling now for the last 10 years.
Retired architect Nina Pence was one of the original members of the Klamath County chapter. She says the group was formed in the early 1970s by citizens concerned about boosting the police and sheriff's departments.
There just wasn't enough law enforcement. Klamath County kind of had the reputation of being the Wild West at that time.
The fledgling group eventually helped in getting a new jail built. Over the years since, the League took on a variety of other causes. In 2006, they got a ballot measure passed that raised a tax on hotel rooms and other transient accommodations to fund tourism programs and cultural events. As recently as last spring, the group spearheaded a successful measure to make county commissioner races bipartisan, which they say will give voters a wider range of choices. Pence, who's in her late 80s, says she's dismayed at the prospect of the chapter folding.
I care about my community, and I can see that the League has had an influence on it.
Leslie Lowe sees a variety of factors contributing to the challenges of attracting new, younger members. Everyone's too busy, scrambling to raise the kids, pay the bills, and meet other obligations. Lowe also points to new technologies changing how people engage in civic life.
They tweet, and they Twitter, and they Facebook, and email, and they're on all kinds of lists and stuff like that.
The same forces that are squeezing the League of Women Voters in Klamath County are affecting rural areas around Oregon and around the country. Bill Hughes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Southern Oregon University, says young people and families are moving away from rural communities. That means a breakdown in generation-to-generation membership in organizations with strong local roots, such as the League.
My mom, or my aunt, or my grandmother, or since, I think, 73, 74, my dad, my uncle, whoever, is in the League. It was part of what was going on when we were growing up, and so we're going to do that too. That's declining, and I think just in terms of demographics, that's one of the reasons.
Hughes also points to a growing tendency to see politics as blood sport.
People, they're drawn to the cut and thrust. They're drawn to the shouting, blowtorch talk radio, blowtorch commentary on TV. That world doesn't accommodate a kind of centrist, civic activism, good government organization like the League of Women Voters.
Meanwhile, in Klamath County, Leslie Lowe is preparing for the worst. She says the loss of the League of Women Voters chapter would be a blow to civility in local politics.
I think more than ever we need a nonpartisan organization to create a place of sanity.
Whether the League can continue to play that role in the civic life of Klamath County is a question that will be answered next May, the group's deadline for getting an infusion of eager new members. I'm Liam Moriarty, reporting.
Still ahead, last night, Astoria resident Robert Adams spoke in favor of a county ordinance that would ban the use of bull hooks, electric prods, and whips related to animal shows.
I think every compassionate citizen really wants that standard upheld, and I think it's the basis for Glossop County's support for the animal shelter and for the private support, of course, of the Wildlife Center.
We'll hear about a proposed county ordinance on the issue. We'll also hear about other actions taken by the commission. Those stories coming up right after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region. Today, patchy morning fog, then showers, mainly this afternoon. Highs around 50 degrees with west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation, 80%. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a 20% chance of showers. Patchy fog after midnight with overnight lows in the mid-40s. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says a front will drop down into the area tomorrow afternoon or evening and bring us some rain and gusty winds into Saturday. This system has the potential to drop the snow levels down to the higher levels of the Coast Range Saturday morning in the post-frontal showers. High pressure returns Sunday, so only a slight chance of showers still, and Monday is looking mostly sunny. Then most of the models are suggesting a return to wet conditions by the middle of next week. Highs in the upper 50s now slowly drop into the low 50s by the weekend. The lows remain in the low 40s, except into the upper 30s by Saturday night. The Board of Clatsop County Commissioners heard a first quarter fiscal year financial report from County Budget and Finance Director Aaron B. Miller. In a series of graphs and charts, B. Miller showed the factors behind a steady reduction in the county general fund balance. Transfers out of the fund are used to support the operations of various county departments. B. Miller said the volatile nature of some county income complicates budget calculations.
Even though we've done well in timber for the first quarter of this year, it doesn't necessarily mean that the timber revenue that will come in by the end of the year will be higher than what was budgeted. It could be lower. At this time, we just don't have any information on that. One of the things that you will hear us say is because of the county's reliance on timber, and it is a volatile revenue source, it does create some concerns in the future.
B. Miller said the bulk of county expenses go to county personnel services.
The biggest chunk of expenses, as you would imagine, comes from personnel services. This is the salary and benefits. And you can see that over time, they're consistently inching their way up, and that makes sense because of increases to benefit rates, cost of living adjustments, and so on and so forth.
B. Miller's report described the uneven timeline of county income and expenditures, increasing costs, income high in some months and low in others. General fund expenses have been coming in at a higher rate than earned revenues, depleting the fund balance over time.
GFOA recommends at a minimum that general purpose governments maintain an unrestricted fund balance of no less than 2 months' operating expenditures. However, based on the volatility of the timber sales revenue, Budget and Finance will be recommending a fund balance policy where the equivalent of 20% of current year budgeted general fund expenses be held as unrestricted fund balance with a longer-term goal of 25%.
B. Miller said the current percentage is at about 17%. County Manager Scott Summers said the county's looking at a 20% fund balance policy. B. Miller said having the reserves helps to plan for contingencies and maintain creditworthiness with banks and rating agencies. Smaller capital projects can also be paid for without incurring loan costs. In B. Miller's presentation, he stated county budgeted expenditures exceeded revenues by about $500,000. He concluded with a warning.
County general fund expenditures have increased at a higher rate than the revenues. The county's reliance on general fund reserves to fill the gap between the revenues and expenses is not sustainable over the long haul.
Board Chairman Peter Hudala thanked B. Miller for the financial report and overview. Clatsop County juvenile offenders will be housed in Washington's Cowlitz County under an agreement approved last night by the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners. Janet Evans, director of the Clatsop County Juvenile Department, said increasing costs and declining revenues have led to increased dependency on the county general fund. For the current fiscal year, budgeted transfers would exceed $500,000. Evans told the commissioners the proposal to terminate the contract with the Oregon Youth Authority for use of the North Coast Youth Correctional Facility in Warrenton would reduce the need for transfers from the general fund.
If we should go through with the contract with Cowlitz County in January through June of 2014, we could expect to have an estimated savings of $114,645 to general fund contributions. And again, that's from the projected $523,000 if we receive all of the rent. In fiscal year 14-15, we can expect to save approximately $222,800. This would include the purchase of a vehicle to do the transports, a transport person or persons to deliver youth back and forth, and other costs.
County Manager Scott Summers said the closure is not a reflection on the effectiveness of the program or the staff.
Together, they've all created a great program. They've done a wonderful job at trying to make what has really been, I think, a difficult situation financially better. And as you can see from the slides, time and time again, there's been little successes, but there's also been a lot of things that weren't successful in terms of losing contracts to other counties, et cetera. It really comes down to a conversation of dollars and cents. And it's an emotional topic. We realize that. We realize this is a really hard conversation. We don't take this lightly. I mean, Janet and I have lost some sleep over the last few weeks because of this conversation, and we think a lot of others have too. It's as I said, a very emotional discussion. Because of the situation that we're in financially, we're having this conversation. We're having it a little earlier, I think, than we anticipated. But mark my words, we were going to have this conversation come this next budget season in April or May, because as you can see from the numbers, it's simply not sustainable. We're spending over $500,000 a year to keep this facility open in Clatsop County, when in fact, on average, we're housing 4.6 Clatsop kids this year, too. And as Janet said, this isn't about eliminating detention. This is simply moving detention an hour away from here to a more cost-effective facility so that we can keep functioning and be fiscally responsible and fiscally prudent.
Clatsop County Judge Philip Nelson spoke against the proposal, saying local detention serves as a deterrent and transporting youth to Cowlitz County would take officers off the streets.
If they're arrested in Warrenton, I don't think Warrenton's going to, or Seaside or any of the jurisdictions are going to want to have one of their officers take 2 or 3 hours or more to transport kid up to Cowlitz County and leave, if it's Warrenton with one officer on or Seaside where they only have two on, city not covered by their own police. And I think Sheriff Bergen's here, and I don't think the county is going to be wanting to, at 11 o'clock at night or midnight, transport a youth up to Cowlitz County and have somebody off the road or not available here if something's going on, and if their officers are tied up, who's going to do that transport?
Evans said in the short term, local beds could be rented on an as-needed basis for emergency local detention, and trained reserve officers could be used for transporting the juveniles, thus keeping regular officers on the street. Debbie Schmidt, representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, said the proposal would cost jobs.
The loss of 7 family wage jobs, 6 union positions, and 1 management is a significant reduction in family wage jobs in the county that is still recovering from the recession. Has the county considered the dual impact of losing good jobs in contrast to our county's need to increase the number of family wage jobs as well as losing tax revenue that inevitably accompanies a reduction in jobs?
Clatsop County Sheriff Tom Bergen spoke up for the proposal, saying moving juvenile detention to Cowlitz County would greatly reduce the county's exposure to liability.
Your highest liability in the county is the jail or juvenile detention. And Heather Reynolds can talk to this probably very well because I run the jail, and the place that we have the most problems for liability to you, the county and the citizens of this county, is the jail. And so therefore, we have certain standards, Oregon State jail standards, that are in place that we have to abide by, and it's immense to maintain the quality and the control. Yeah, things still do happen, and even just 2 months ago, I believe, or 3 months ago, there was an attempted hanging in the juvenile facility, but luckily our great staff were there to help and revive this child. However, at skeleton staffing that we're trying to maintain, you're going to run into more liability issues than anywhere else in the county.
After hearing the testimony, Commissioner Deborah Birkbe acknowledged the impacts that would be imposed by moving juvenile detention out of the county, but said financial considerations could not be put off any longer.
It does, at some point, need to get down to, do you have the money to pay the staff that wants to keep their job or not? Do you have the money to continue? I'm afraid to say I don't think that we do.
Birkbe moved to contract with Cowlitz County for youth detention beds and terminate the contract with the Oregon Youth Authority. The motion passed unanimously. The Board of Commissioners held a first reading for an ordinance that would ban the use of bullhooks, electric prods, and whips on elephants, felines, or primates when they're on display, performing, or being trained in Clatsop County. Last year, Clatsop County voters rejected a measure that would have banned the display of elephants and other exotic animals in circuses and similar events. Astoria resident Robert Adams spoke up in support of the current proposal, saying the ordinance asks for fundamental decency in the handling of captive wild animals, but does not prohibit their display.
I think every compassionate citizen really wants that standard upheld, and I think it's the basis for Clatsop County's support for the animal shelter and for the private support, of course, of the Wildlife Center. Both institutions, I think, are expressive of general public support for decent behavior toward animals. I think the one thing we want to begin by noticing here is what this ordinance is not. It is not a prohibition of animal circuses or wild animal acts. It mandates only that the animals in them not be tormented. It also does not, as I understand the conduct of rodeos, have anything to do with rodeos. If someone wants to discuss the propriety of rodeos, that of course can be done, but not today because the proposed ordinance does not affect their conduct. It seems to me that there are three questions that arise in any occasion of this sort. One of them is, the very first question is, why should cruelty be impermissible? It may sound simple, and I know that you on the commission know the answer, but in case there's any question about it, it seems to me that most citizens believe that we are given responsibility to care for the creation and so to reflect and express our Creator's caring. And as a consequence, the unnecessary infliction of pain on living creatures is inconsistent with the responsibility that we've been given.
Brownsmead resident Carol Newman said last month the Los Angeles City Council took action on a similar ban of bull hooks and other devices used in controlling the behavior of circus elephants. Members of Clatsop Animal Advocates also spoke in favor of the ordinance. Further public comment is continued until the next commissioner's meeting on December 11th. That's all the time we have for today's show. The news schedule for The Bridge is weekly, Thursday mornings at 9. We welcome your comments on the show. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1, that's N-E-W-S, then the numeral 1, at kmun.org. I'm Kathleen Morgane saying thanks for listening today, and listen again next Thursday for the next edition of The Bridge.